Blog Talk Radio.
Your hostess for Talk Solar, and we are so glad you've joined us today as we talk to Dr. Stephen Smith of Southern Alliance for Clean Energy and Solar in the Southeast. But before we start the conversation, we're going to hear a quick ad from our sponsor.
Panna Solar is the largest solar integrator in Georgia and one of the largest in the Southeast, with installation on schools, farms, churches, data centers, and a variety of commercial and residential projects. Panna Solar will provide the best solar system for your varied needs. If you have a solar project in the Southeast, then Hanna Solar is your partner for completing the job. Visit Hanna Solar at www.hannasolar.com for more information.
Today we're going to be talking to Dr. Stephen Smith, who has 30 years of experience in affecting change for the environment. Since 1993, Dr. Smith has led the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, also known as SACE, as its executive director. SACE is a nonprofit 501c3 organization working to promote responsible energy choices that create global warming solutions and ensure clean, safe, and healthy communities throughout the Southeast. SACE has grown to be a premier voice for energy efficiency and renewable energy issues in the region. Dr. Smith holds a doctorate in veterinary medicine from the University of Tennessee and a Bachelor of Science in Biology from Kentucky Wesleyan College. In 2009, he and his family commissioned a 7.1 kilowatt rooftop solar photovoltaic system on their Knoxville home, and the previous October they installed a solar thermal system. By coupling these solar technologies with additional energy efficiency investments, the Smiths strive to live in a net zero energy home. Dr. Smith's other areas of interest include sailing, scuba diving, and beekeeping. He practices Ho-Am Taekwondo as a first-degree black belt and is an instrument-rated private pilot with over 5,000 hours flight time. Through his genealogy research, Dr. Smith has identified several family members who served in the Revolutionary War, which designates him as a son of the American Revolution. Welcome, Stephen.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Beth. Thank you very much.
I am a fellow daughter of the American Revolution, so that is something we have in common besides being solar. Well, I call myself a solar zealot. I'm not sure I'm going to give you that, but I am all about the solar, so we are glad to have you here today because we want to talk about solar in the Southeast. It's recognized that solar conversations in the Southeast are sort of behind the rest of the country, although in the last couple of years it seems to be picking up steam. So why is solar such an important resource, especially here in the Southeast?
Well, I think for a number of reasons. First, just a basic fact that in 1 hour of one day, the amount of solar energy that hits the Earth is enough to power all of the needs for all of humanity for a full year. So it's a tremendous resource, and it's a resource that is literally God-given in the sense that it comes to us on a daily basis, and we as a species need to figure out how to take better advantage of it and capture it in cost-effective ways. So it's a gift, and we should use it. It has a very low environmental footprint as compared to other ways that we generate electricity. And so in the Southeast, which has been a region that has historically been more dependent on coal than many other parts of the country, and we are dealing with the implications of that coal from cradle to grave, the mining, the air pollution that comes from it, the post-combustion waste we're seeing in North Carolina, the devastation going on right now that has happened with the Dan River, with the coal ash spill there, and we've experienced it in other places, and there's lots of issues with the way we produce and consume energy. So solar power is a clean and affordable resource that is being underutilized, and so we are very bullish on it, and as you said earlier, we're beginning to see some real movement in the Southeast where we're finally realizing that it's a resource that we should be engaging more in our region.
Now, there's been a lot of technology advances and, of course, a lot of market causes that have lowered costs. Why do you think we're still having to sort of convince people in the Southeast that that solar works?
Well, I think there is an issue with people still have the idea that solar is dramatically more expensive than traditional forms of energy. And the cost curves coming down for solar have been literally breathtaking over the last, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. And this has really put solar into the money, in, so to speak, in the way that it can now begin to compete with traditional resources. This is particularly true with large-scale solar projects. And large-scale solar projects now are actually coming in where they're competitive with traditional generation resources in the energy cost. Now, obviously, solar requires the sun to be up, and so it is intermittent. And so some people continue to discredit solar because it's not there 24 hours and 7 days a week. But the reality is it's there when it matters, and the energy costs are getting so low that it is a valuable resource to deploy in our region. And so we're beginning to see people's minds beginning to shift. On the more distributed side of solar, which is where you put it on a rooftop, on a business, the costs are still a little bit higher, but they are coming down also. And there are a number of people that are taking advantage of deploying solar on their homes and on their businesses, and this is helping people become more familiar with the technology, which I think is helping people overcome either preconceived notions or many people just don't keep track of the industry and aren't aware of how dramatically the prices have dropped.
Well, and I certainly travel in a lot of variety of circles with my work in Southeast Green, and it is sort of, I mean, everyone in the energy sector, whether they want to admit it or not, knows the pricing has come down and is very competitive, especially when you start looking out, you know, free energy over a 20 to 30 year life cycle. But there's still a lot of other people in other industries who just, they haven't gotten the message. So there's clearly some challenges on the energy folks side to sort of get that message out. Do you have any tips or suggestions that might help them get that word out more?
Well, I think everybody should encourage people to update their understanding of where the technology is. And we try, we intervene quite frequently in regulatory proceedings at the state level, and we are constantly challenging the utilities and the regulatory commissions, the public service commissions and utility commissions, to update their information about the cost of solar, because it's easy for people to get behind on the downward curve of where we are with the true cost of solar. The other thing, though, that we need to be aware of is there are some special interest or some business interests that really don't want to see solar succeed because it threatens their business model. And a lot of the larger utilities are in this case because they tend to see particularly the small solar on people's rooftops and businesses as taking away market share for their if people come in and set up solar on their home, and when the sun is shining, they're not buying electrons from the local utility. We think that's a good thing. Some utilities don't necessarily see it as a good thing. The other thing that's happening is that there are companies now that are setting up business models to come in and offer third-party sales or third-party leases where they'll actually go in and begin to aggregate, collect customers within a utility service territory, set up deals with them where they'll pay to put the solar on their people's homes and set up a relationship with customers who had this relationship with their local utility company, and that becomes very threatening to local utilities companies. So we're beginning to see some, unfortunately, some pushback and some attempts to thwart solar's growth, and some utilities are taking a more proactive position on this. Others are trying to hold on to their old worldview business model.
Right, and I always say, you know, business history should be remembered as equally as world history, because when you see industry, and you know, you can look at the last 100 years, and there's probably been 20 sort of shifts for big, huge industries. The resistance to change is normally the demise of their business model. Where I believe, and I'm sure that many people in the industry, solar installer in particular, agree that if they would adopt it, they could actually control it more. I mean, in some ways, I think the utilities adopting it more rapidly would actually really challenge some of the business models out there for the small installer types. So I guess it's opportunity for some and loss of opportunity for others. The other thing that we're really seeing, and this is also sort of, because the utility conversation is also a national, we are not unique in that in the Southeast, and of course is net metering debates. Can you explain net metering and why this is so challenging?
Well, net metering basically is that if, like on my house, I have solar on my house, when the sun is out, I'm generating electrons, and if I don't use them all in my home, I want to be able to push them back onto the grid, which other people can use, which is actually a good thing, and I should get some credit for that. And in the classic sense, it would be that when my house is generating power, I run my meter backwards. And then at night, or say sometime when I'm either using more power than my system is generating, or I am, the conditions aren't right, then I'm pulling off the grid. My meter is running traditionally forward. And at the end of some agreed upon time period, you basically figure out, you true up what it is, and then you either get a credit or you pay less or whatever. And that's sort of the traditional way that net metering works. What's happening is that there's been an explosion, literally expansion, of customers taking advantage of net metering. And the utilities are seeing that as their costs rise and the solar costs come down, that the customer is getting a better and better deal for having solar on their house. And they're trying to figure out ways to sort of thwart that. And the other thing, that one of the ways they're trying to do that, which there's a limited amount of truth in what they're saying, but they're really overblowing it, is that, well, customers who are doing net metering are not paying, quote-unquote, their fair share for the grid. And so a lot of utilities now are trying to figure out, well, how do we figure out some cost that we can impose on customers who are taking advantage of this to slow the growth down and, quote-unquote, make it fair. And the reality is, once you really dig into that, peel the onion, understand those costs, there are really not many costs there at all. And if you were to do a full analysis of what the value of solar is versus the value of the grid, the value of solar is significantly more. So, but the utilities are using this argument and trying to use this argument, they haven't been tremendously successful in a number of the jurisdictions, and this is happening around the country, to try to slow down this really rapid uptake of solar that's going on and to try to keep their business model intact. But, again, I think that it's something we need to watch closely. We need to make sure that there's really good analysis done, because if the analysis is done, many of these arguments for the utilities sort of fall away, particularly for most small systems that are going on people's homes and at the level of penetration we're seeing. You would have to have penetration rates probably well in excess of 20 or 30% to where it really became, some of the things they're saying became more of an issue. And we're a long, long way away from that. So I think this is a little bit of a red herring that's being used to try to confuse and slow down and prevent solar from expanding as fast as it can for those utilities who want to hold on to their old business model.
Well, time for change. That's what I think.
Absolutely.
And So I know that, you know, we had a little bit of that kind of challenge here in Georgia. Of course, the most famous national case is what's happening in Arizona. And but then I sort of wanted to talk about the biggest state in regards to the Southeast that has just basically said no solar. So let's talk a little bit about Florida, because Florida, is I think the population now is 25 million, which is basically the population of Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana combined. And yet Florida has taken this interesting stance where they're going to do no solar, and that their 20 to 40-year energy plan is just to drive a bunch of natural gas pipelines across the state of Georgia so they can have 60% of their energy supplied by natural gas. So we're not going to talk about how I feel about, you know, Georgia becoming the, not only are we the interstate to Disney World, we're now going to become the interstate for electricity for Florida, but just talk about what's going on there. I know you all recently had a rally there, and why this is so confounding that in the Sunshine State that they cannot seem to get any solar policy in place.
Well, it's a very good question, because as you said, Florida is about to become the third most populous state in the United States. They are the largest market in the United States that does not have a coherent energy policy or energy plan at the state level. They have the best solar resource of any state east of the Mississippi River. And so they should be a leader. And what is happening in Florida is that you have a couple of very dominant utilities, primarily Florida Power and Light, which is ironic because FP&L, Florida Power and Light, is a regulatory subsidiary of NextEra. And NextEra is a company that goes all over the United States in competitive markets and competes with clean energy in these competitive markets. But because they have their regulated subsidiary, a monopoly in Florida, they're actually less enthusiastic about renewable energy in Florida, and they're captive customers to the monopoly. They don't give a robust option of clean energy options, which is really sad. And they, along with some of the other utilities, have been very effective in thwarting the ability to do distributed solar. There's laws on the books that keep direct third-party sales from happening. Florida also, because it doesn't have an income tax, they have higher tangible personal property taxes. And they have not, when the companies come in that try to do the third-party leasing, because of these taxes, they've not been able to make the deals pencil out. And the utilities have not been willing to work to try to get those taxes rolled back so that the companies can come in and offer distributed solar. We tried to do that this legislative session, and our bill got squashed by the utility companies, basically. And so because it doesn't have good policy, Florida doesn't have the traditional utility planning mechanisms like called integrated resource planning, the utilities are able to drive the equation more towards gas and nuclear, which is where Florida is becoming very, very dependent on natural gas. Unfortunately, also in Tallahassee, which is the state capital, we haven't had a governor, the current governor, Rick Scott, that has really been interested in embracing solar. So if you look at his tenure, there was more solar installed in 2010, the first year, which was already in the pipeline, before he came into office, than in the 3.5 years since then, and at the same time, the price of solar has dropped by roughly 50% in that time period. So you should be seeing an explosion in the market in Florida, and yet under Rick Scott's leadership, there has been virtually no solar activity at all. And then you have a conservative legislature that has largely been influenced dramatically by the amount of money that the utilities. We did a report working with a group called Integrity Florida that looked at the amount of money that has flown into Tallahassee, into the state capital, by the utilities to try to influence policy there. So you have a very tangled web mess there. The good news, though, is that the price of solar continues to come down. Floridians are getting fed up with this. As you mentioned, we had a solar uprising rally in Tallahassee in April. Former Governor Charlie Crist, who is actually fairly bullish on solar, is actually running against Rick Scott in November. So you're going to see a very stark set of positions between the two candidates about the likeliness for solar to be deployed in Florida in a big way, what Charlie Crist wants versus sort of the business as usual with the utilities that Rick Scott wants. And so hopefully voters will prevail in November, and we'll see a change there, which then can begin to see other things happen because the governor has an influence on who's in the Public Service Commission. The governor can use administrative authority, these type of things. But the people in Florida are really getting fed up with the fact that Florida's falling further and further behind other states in their solar deployment.
So that's really good. Where do you see Florida going? I mean, clearly they've got an election. So the election is going to be a big defining moment in regards to where they go. If the standing governor wins re-election, couching the question, but is there any hope for Florida in the next 4 years if Scott wins?
I would say that the prospects are poor for a real growth in the market in Florida if Rick Scott wins, unless we can do something with, say, ballot referendums or whatever to basically force some of these issues even around our intransigent governor. But I think that we may see, because the price points are becoming so positive, I think we may see utility-scale solar. Some of the utilities have expressed an interest in doing solar that they own, and I think that the price points are getting so good that we may see some of that. And Florida is literally trending towards becoming, you know, like 60 to 70% dependent on natural gas. You mentioned the pipelines coming through other southeastern states. That, while natural gas prices are low now, it seems to be working. But I don't believe it is a good policy for any state to get too dependent on one particular resource. So where we think solar, if we had the right planning mechanisms that looked at both cost and risk, which Florida doesn't do a good job of doing, you're going to want to diversify your portfolio, and solar is a natural to do that because solar can actually work very well with natural gas, and it can actually, when the sun is shining, you can back the gas down. You don't use it, and then, you know, gas can follow load easier than, say, some other types of generation. So we believe that the future is going to be very bright for solar. I think in Florida, I think the question is really going to be, when does the political leadership really get the memo and get caught up with what the rest of the country is doing? And we're cautiously optimistic that the November election will begin that change process. And I think Florida will eventually return to its rightful position to be the Sunshine State. We had a speaker actually from Georgia that said at our rally, basically, she said, if Florida doesn't, Georgia's going to take the Sunshine State motto away from Florida because Georgia is doing much more solar investment. Georgia did more solar in the last quarter of 2013 than Florida has done in the last 3 years.
Wow. That is just astounding, absolutely remarkable. Because, I mean, just from a size perspective of Georgia,
right,
in regards to its population, right? Clearly, you know, Georgia Power has also shown a lot of leadership. I know some people may say not enough of leadership, but compared to where they were 5 years ago, it's been an amazing and remarkable, and I think they should be applauded for what they've done with solar. Sometimes they haven't always liked it, but that's okay. And I think
Absolutely.
That it's a good model. And that's the other thing that I think is so confounding because, you know, the Panhandle, which is where I sort of consider home in regards to family members, you know, they're Gulf Power. And yet Gulf Power has not really done a lot either, and I guess it's a wait and see there. But I think Gulf Power should show the leadership, and that's my opinion.
No, you're exactly right, because the resource in the Panhandle is excellent, and but it sort of shows that Georgia Power, to their credit, has done some things, and they've done some things in other parts of the country, but what has really set things in motion in Georgia has been the Georgia Public Service Commission really taking a leadership role under, you know, Bubba McDonald and others there to basically tell the power company that you need to take a serious look at this. Our expectation is, and when the commission speaks with that kind of authority, the company follows. What we haven't seen is in Alabama and Mississippi and in Florida, the other southeastern states that Southern Company's in, and Georgia Power is a subsidiary Southern Company, you're not seeing it. So from a corporate philosophy, Southern Company hasn't made a big commitment to solar. Georgia Power has, based on the Public Service Commission. But as Georgia Power gets into it more and begins to see it, we've had conversations with them, you're beginning to see their attitudes change. And so this is slow and frustrating, because a lot of us would like to see it happen faster, but we are beginning to see cracks in the wall of resistance. And they better get the memo, because as you mentioned earlier, you know, you can look at Kodak and the digital camera. You can look at a lot of companies who didn't change their business model and didn't change with the times, who have, some have successfully made transitions, some haven't. And so the utility companies, and Tom Fanning, the CEO of Southern Company, has told me several times he doesn't want to be in the quote-unquote buggy whip business, you know, when the automobile comes out. Well, they better get the memo on solar, because it is coming, and they need to incorporate it into their portfolio, and they need to find ways to work with the strong public support for solar, as opposed to finding ways to slow it down.
Well, I love that quote from Tom Fanning, and he's right, right? It's, I look at railroads, you look at the computers, and I mean, there's just so many examples, and so I love it that Tom Fanning has that kind of that leadership perspective, because that's what's going to happen if they don't get on board. So anyway, well, we are out of time. Of course, in fact, we've gone over time, so thank you graciously for your little bit of extra time. Tell folks how people can get more information about SACE and the work y'all are doing.
Yeah, the best way to stay in touch with us is through our website, which is easy. It's www.cleanenergy.org, cleanenergy.org. There's lots of opportunities there. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us through Twitter. But we have a robust social media. There's great ways to plug into the work we're doing. We'd love to have people join us in what we're trying to do, is transform the way people produce and consume energy in the Southeast to make it a better environmental footprint.
Well, we really appreciate your time, and maybe after the election in November we can have another conversation to sort of what's going to happen in Florida.
Right. That'd be great.
Great. Thank you so much, Stephen.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I don't know. Since South Carolina actually grows more peaches than Georgia, then maybe it's time for us to become the Sunshine State, since people are sort of borrowing each other's state mottos. We'll look forward to seeing what happens in the upcoming elections. Clearly, this is not just about a market. Clearly, policy and politics go hand in hand with energy. So it'll be an exciting election season. Next week, we are going to be interviewing NABCEP, the executive director from NABCEP. So I hope you'll join us for that. We're really excited to have Richard Lawrence on there with us. And thanks so much for listening, and thank you to Clean Technica for their support. And this is Beth Bond signing out.